11. Track A, Appliance Firewalls, a detailed review.
About the head and shoulders after this presentation, and in the meantime, I recommend that you move forward. Brent's presentation is on Appliance Firewalls, a detailed review. Thanks, Brent. If you'll give him a hand.
Thanks, Lori. Appreciate it. Everybody have a good break and everything?
Jeez.
Okay. Well, I'm Brent Houston. I'm the president of Microsolved Incorporated, and I just recently took another position in my spare time where I'm working on defining proper security procedures, policies, and implementations for the Department of Energy. So you might see a little bit more of me doing that. Today what we're going to talk about is appliance firewalls, and just completed a major review of the appliance firewall industry, so that's where this data came from. Before we get started, I want to talk about a real quick disclaimer. There are product names that are contained within this presentation, and the copyrights and trademarks of those belong to their respective companies. For the company names, there is a slide in the presentation that gives that information. You will not hear today of the product names that we reviewed and didn't get success with. We are in the process of creating a white paper, but the lawyers are still fighting about what we can and can't say and getting all of those releases of information all tied together. So today you'll hear about some of those, but in a non-specific format. First thing let's talk about is what is the agenda. We're going to define what an appliance firewall is, talk about what technologies they employ. And we deployed this, we kind of started this whole process looking for a solution for some clients that had come to us. And we created a mock deployment scenario that we filled out and built some table and categorized some data for, and we'll kind of cover that as to what we were looking for. We'll talk a little bit about some of the successes that we had in the process, some of the things that we were amazed at, and the problems that we discovered. That will also include some of the things that we were quite frankly amazed at. We'll talk a little bit about the future of network appliances, where we kind of believe that they're going and where we need to see them go to become a practical solution for some of the larger clients and companies that are out there, and a little bit of summary information. Now, when we first started this whole process some 6 months ago, we did a very simple search on the internet, started with appliance firewall. And the very first thing that we discovered was that our definition of an appliance firewall and vendors' definitions of appliance firewalls were two completely and totally different things. It seemed to be that their definition was anything that came in a box. That didn't quite fit what we were looking for. We got some pretty interesting stuff there. When I say we here, there's a team of six folks that worked on this project, and they vary in skill level from administrators all the way up to security professionals that are working out in the industry. But what we kind of did was sit down and draft what we decided we were looking for and what fit an actual appliance. And the very first thing was that it needed to be an integrated hardware solution. This was going to be very similar to a toaster, is how we kind of wanted to think of it. This is a plug-in and do what you need to do kind of device. It needed to include all the software, including the operating system, everything preloaded on the platform. The folks that we were looking to deploy these were going to deploy a great number of them, and they were not skilled users or administrators, so we needed some fairly simple processes for them. And at the very end, everybody was kind of pushing this network black box approach to security, where kind of the security by obscurity process of the physical device. I'm not sure how much I actually buy into that part, but we did add that into the description of what an appliance is. We learned a lot about the evolution of these products. They started out as firewall features that got added into original series routers. And that all started with basic packet filtering, looking at packet content based upon source, destination, and protocol. And over the next 6 months to a year, as those router products began to grow and evolve, folks started to embed application-specific proxies into those devices. And from there, someone came out with the concept of stateful inspection, and that stuff was added. And that eventually grew into the appliance firewall, as you see it and know it today. As far as what technologies they employ, without exception, almost all of them are based upon the basic premise of network address translation, or NAT. We found in cases of some of the firewalls, this was not even an option. You couldn't disable network address translation. So as it is the basis of their security and protection mechanisms, much of it was actually integrated into the device. The majority of them that are on the market use packet filtering rules to determine whether or not packets gain access to the internal protected network. Some do use stateful inspection to manage those connections. For those of you who aren't familiar with what stateful inspection is, it's basically a dynamic table built into the device's memory that maintains a process of gathering and monitoring connections that are active and only allowing packets that respond to originated or enduring living sessions. So that's kind of what stateful inspection is in a summary. Some of them did include application proxy support. A few of them, and they got bonus points for this, allowed you to create custom proxies of your own choosing. Many of them only included basic services such as HTTP, FTP, and while that was great for small companies, invariably, as security administrators and firewall administrators know, the day you deploy those devices that don't include real audio and net meeting, that's the day the management edict comes down that has to happen in the next 30 days. The CIO usually has something he has to do to net meet about. There were some other helpful features that we kind of didn't feel were super necessary, but that we thought might be kind of good to have. And the first one was built-in application servers. If this little box that we could plug in included a mail server, a web server, and an FTP server, all the more points, all the more great reason to use it. DHCP support, with the growth of cable modems and other devices that rely upon network addressing being dynamic, it just made sense to us that the external interfaces on the firewalls should support DHCP. Unfortunately, many of them do not, and that kind of left us a little wondering. Some of them do include internal DHCP servers, which was a very nice feature for those folks who were using those devices. We wanted built-in VPN capability, although, like I said, this really wasn't a deal killer, so to speak. And much of what we saw was either point-to-point or client-based VPN coming out of this process. We really wanted strong authentication support. The ability to really challenge in response or use some type of strong authentication method for the users. We kind of talked about URL and content blocking. We didn't, again, see this as being super important, but a lot of the sites that we were looking at were looking to deploy some content monitoring to keep you folks from going where you're not supposed to go and doing all those things that you like to do. Many of them included DMZ configurations, which allows for the third interface to be where you would place a server farm for semi-trusted private and public access. And we were real thrilled when we saw that some of those devices do. We were amazed at some of the devices that did not, and we'll kind of talk a little bit about that. And the last real bonus point that folks got out of this was SNMP support. We had some clients who were they were dying to use SNMP. They had spent a lot of money for some Tivoli product that they wanted to deploy, and they really liked that process. As far as the management functions go, right off the bat, this is where our first learning curve came in. We're used to dealing with large-scale firewalls, and we were not ready for the management functions that were out there. Web-based management was easiest to use, and they had allowed us to deploy it in a much greater and more flexible manner. What we discovered, though, was that some folks are using this process in some manners that are highly insecure. We found some of the web servers that didn't even use SSL connectivity to manage that management process, if you will. Many of them came with custom applications. They provided some ease, but they lacked the true remote management ability that you would get from, or believe that you were getting from, an appliance. Wherever you go, you'd have to take this little CD-ROM, a laptop, or some floppies, and throw this program on whatever device you needed to manage the process. And that didn't sit real well with us. We needed to be able to manage these devices from pretty much anywhere in the world. Some of them were even worse. They required direct cable solutions. And this is literally, in most cases, a null modem cable that runs off the serial port of a laptop or a computer and plugs into the back of this little appliance device. And that is the only method by which some of these devices may be configured. The worst case was a direct custom cable that had RJ45 on one end and a 9-pin serial on the other that you had to connect up and use slip. That became so infuriating very quickly as the cable that they shipped it with got cut and some of the wires were broken in the shipping process courtesy of one of those big shipping companies. So you can imagine how much fun that was. Our mock deployment consisted of the goal to locate an appliance firewall that could protect our medium-sized business, and we approximated 500 users. Now, that was across the board wide, not so much on a per firewall basis. Some of these will support 500 users. Some of them, quite frankly, had some problems supporting 50 users. So be very careful and aware of what those user bases that are out there today are using. We were looking for ease of deployment and management. We wanted to provide adequate security for internal systems. The companies that we were looking for are manufacturing companies, so this type of solution is not something I would recommend for you if you have financial data or high priority data that you need to protect. This is definitely for folks who are not going to be doing mission critical or protecting infrastructure type of information. We wanted to allow access to our mail and web servers. If it wasn't included on the device, we wanted to be able to punch through and allow users externally to gain access to those services. And in the event of an attack, we wanted to be alerted. Pretty simple firewall rules would seem, exactly what a firewall is supposed to do. As usual, once we got all this stuff together, at the last moment, the client threw in some more bonus features. They wanted good documentation. That was kind of to be expected, and certainly a worthwhile investment for you folks who are out there building these products. We were looking for ease of maintenance. We wanted to be able to deploy these firewalls, walk away, manage them remotely, and not have to visit the site again as they were going to be geographically dispersed. Real-time reporting became pretty important as we started to notice some of the effects that the logs were having. And content blocking kept becoming more and more important to our client as they were undergoing some internal events that precluded that problem. SNMP alerting, they continued to stress that, as well as VPN between branches. The interesting thing we did discover in this process was a need for failure recovery. And what we determined was that with the exception of only maybe one or two of these firewalls, none of them included any type of failover or failure response process. Those that did it very well, and those that didn't, they didn't do it at all. Their response was usually replace the firewall, keep a spare.
What kind of failure recovery are you talking about? Like the power supply goes up to another one?
That's correct. Or if, for example, the question was what kind of failure recovery were we looking for? In the event that the device would stop functioning, what has to happen to get that device back up. If this is your link to the internet, you can't afford to be down for 2 or 3 days while you figure out how to replace the firewall itself.
So it's no matter what, it just has to be catastrophic and then go to the device?
That's correct. His question was, were we looking for it to be catastrophic and then go to another device? And that's exactly what we were looking for. As far as our security desires, being firewall people, security professionals, we really, in our heads, we were looking for extensive logging of successful connections, rejected packets, and a large part of quantified suspected attacks. When an event occurred, we wanted to know that it had occurred and be able to respond to that process. We were looking for immunity to denial of service attacks, that's quite common, protection against information gathering probes, and the big thing was an initial denial rule set for access. So we started with 23 different vendor products, and those products we gathered into our lab, and we performed a series of tests. And I'll run through that testing process pretty quickly. There were, as I said, 6 technicians involved in the process. We started by setting the devices up with 2 interfaces, 1 simulated external network and a simulated protected internal network. We ran all of the industry standard scanners against the product. We ran most of the freeware and shareware attacks against the product. And then we had 2 penetration experts sit down and actually attempt to probe and break into the firewall. And so that was kind of the process. The process was documented. All of that data will be available in the white paper as soon as it comes through the legal process. And we had, out of those 23, we ended up having 5 successes. And these aren't in any particular order, so we'll kind of just mention them as we go. The first one was the Phoenix Adaptive Firewall. And this firewall, it's a little black plug-and-play box is how they bill it. It's built out of Linux on a Cobalt server. It had excellent setup process using the front panel. This was literally, it had some LEDs on the front, an LCD display, and it walks you through step-by-step, setting up each IP address, all of the ranges, everything that you need to do right there from the front panel. You don't need to plug it in, you don't have to telnet, you don't need any custom cables. The management of it long-term comes via web-based Java applet, but it's not something that you carry around with you. You download the Java applet from the device itself, it will send it to a browser, run the Java applet, and allow you to go. All of the traffic that we watched between the Java applet and the client was all encrypted. We asked them about that, and is Bruce in here? Okay. It's triple DES, so I'm sure it's okay. Those of you who saw it this morning. The great thing about this product that just really made it in our minds was that it had so many logging options. It's based on, as I said, the Linux kernel, so all of the Linux-based logging options were there. And we were able to pull attack recognition and signatures from the device. Very, very useful. There is an alternate command interface for those of you who are interested or who are Linux proficient. You actually can drop to a Linux command prompt and issue file commands to perform on the box. That made it very, very useful for folks who were diagnosing problems. Fantastic for that. We did have a couple of cons about it. First of all, the Java applet crashed twice during the rule application and changes process. In addition, whenever it did crash, the firewall had to be completely rebooted as the external interface that you were making changes to failed to respond. And the access control rule set management, it was a little bit confusing. First of all, you define an access control list, and then you apply it to those interfaces which you want it running on. And then you determine as well what rule set will be in place every time the firewall boots. So it was a 3-step process to actually get all that set up. And that was kind of confusing since every time that we tried to change it initially, it crashed. and it would come up with this default rule set. The next one that we had some success with was Sonic Wall DMZ. This is a great little box. It looks like a little four-port hub. It's about that same size. It's very small. It's literally about 6 inches by 6 inches. And it had an excellent management interface. This was also web-based. It used SSL to connect us. And it had an integrated DHCP server for both the internal and external address, or excuse me, interface. It would actually connect up to cable modem systems that we have deployed, such as the one by Time Warner. We could actually run it on those cable modem devices. It had a predefined rule set for most of the common applications. And the great thing about this was it really went beyond what I would consider most common applications to the ones that you really want. It included real audio, real video, net meeting, some VPN traffic as well. And the documentation was just excellent. One of the biggest cons that we had about this product was it felt kind of cheap and lightweight. And we were kind of afraid that if we dropped it, we would break it. We had that kind of feeling. It also, amazingly, is not the right size to fit in a rack. And we had some problems trying to find a place to put the thing and to hold it securely. Logging could have been more robust, and we noticed that it would sometimes miss events. For example, if you were experiencing a port flood from host A and a port scan started from system B, it would sometimes miss that port scan from host B. And go ahead. None of these did. Only out of all the 23, only two had log analysis tools that were available even as an add-on. Most of these, you would have to, I brought that up actually with the folks from Phoenix, and their suggestion was that I write some grep scripts to grep that out of the var log messages. The other real problem we had with the Sonic Wall, we called them and asked them directly about their upgrade process, because this thing literally is solid state. When we opened it up, it didn't even have a hard disk in it. And their response to that was, well, whenever we upgrade the firewall, normally folks just buy a replacement. That seemed to be a little bit of a con to us. We talked with them. They are talking about a solid state replacement in the future, but not available today. The next one was Interceptor, and this thing was really easy to set up and manage. That's really its strong point. We had some folks who were able to get this thing up and running in under 10 minutes with a basic rule set. The interesting thing is it comes packaged with the ISS scanner product so that you can license for that so that you can routinely scan your own firewall and determine where your weaknesses lie. And it had excellent reliability and resistance to denial of service attacks. We pounded on this thing with every DOS attack we could find, and we could not get it to stop responding or crash. As far as cons go, Nmap immediately picked up its underlying OS as being Linux. And we were pretty much amazed at that. Given the state of the box, we took a look at it, and pretty amazing engineering work there. Logging on this device consistently misses port scans. It does not seem to notice any time that a FIN or an ACK scan is done. And we didn't find any ability in the device to build custom application proxies. So we called the support help desk, and they kept telling us that those would be coming in future revisions. That might be something to be aware of if you need more than the basic services. Next was the PIX firewall. And we noticed right off the bat that this firewall was extremely configurable. And the logs were some of the best that were out there in these platform of firewalls. Great documentation. Everything came on a CD in HTML and PDF format. It was fantastic. We could do searches, automated searching for whatever we needed. This device was one of the few that came with any type of failover at all, and it was absolutely amazing. If you could, for example, pull the external cable out of the interface, within about 15 seconds, it would fail over and maintain the connections that were in place to a second firewall. That was fantastic. It was extremely stable and resistant to denial of service attacks. The cons that we kind of ran into, setup and configuration was extremely complex. In the new version, we had actually two versions of this firewall. The old version was pretty easy to set up. They then shipped us, about 90 days later, a new release upgrade of the product, and resetting it up was extremely complex. You actually had to go in and allocate IP address pools for this thing to use in dynamic allocation, and it was extremely user irritable to do that. Also, the initial setup of the device is serial cable only. You have to have a null modem cable to connect and operate the box. Once it is up and running, they do give you a command line interface that you can enable to telnet in there, but initially it was kind of a pain. There is now a GUI that is available since we've done this. However, it only runs on Windows NT Server. It will not run on Windows NT Workstation or 95 or 98. So that was kind of a problem. And this firewall relies solely upon stateful inspection packet filtering. There is no application proxies, and there aren't planned to be any proxy available for this firewall device. Firebox 2 was the next one that we really liked. And in this one, configuration and management was simple. It was literally plug and play. It had extremely robust security and denial of service attack resistance. This is another one of the boxes we just couldn't drop. We tried everything, including bandwidth-based denial of service, and we just could not get the device to stop logging. The logging was indeed very adequate. It gave us everything that we needed, except that it didn't recognize attack signatures. It would only log dropped packets, but it wouldn't, for example, send an alert that said there was a probable port scan. So we were kind of looking, I guess, for a little more of an IDS built into it than what was available. Also, the great thing about the Firebox, there are these wonderful warning lights that sit on the device on the front of it, so that when it's rack mounted, with a glance, you can determine its status and whether or not it's sending and receiving packets. They're very easy to use, as they're red, green, and yellow, so if you guys can't figure that out, what's going on, then might give it another shot. As far as cons went for this device, right off the bat, documentation was pretty unclear. It was very confusing. We called tech support, and they seemed to be as unclear about the documentation as we were. So that was kind of an issue for us. And management is via a dedicated application that you have to carry around with you. It comes with a CD. That was the only bad points that we could find about the Firebox itself. We made some pretty interesting discoveries as we went through this whole process. And the first one is that several products were significantly, and I say that again, significantly less than what we considered to be a firewall. Some performed only NAT with no logging or access control at all. It was basically a smart NAT box that you would plug in and it would masquerade all of the internal IP addresses. Some were also billed as firewalls, and we were told by vendors that they did all of these great things, but when we got them, they shipped us two. And we found out that they were indeed simply point-to-point encryptors with no logging, no NAT, no anything. So we were kind of disappointed in that. Logging in general across the platforms was poor. And we say that in comparison to other firewalls that are on the market today. When we think of firewalls, we really want the usability of being able to pull network reports as far as what traffic is being accepted and being rejected. And we were looking for some more clear and concise information from these devices than what we received. We mentioned this to all of the vendors, and many of them simply said that it wasn't in their development plans, that we were asking kind of more than what the platform was able to perform. Other issues, most of the devices that we found featured management that was difficult to use or kludgy at best. It always seemed like the thing that we wanted to do was in the next release. It always seemed like every management process that seemed feasible to us as firewall administrators just wasn't quite there yet. It was another 90 days away, or it was next quarter. And that was extremely frustrating. Most of the devices had no automated system to manage failure. We talked about that. And most of the devices did not notice or log attempted attacks in any format other than rejected packet information. In some cases, we even took their own management software and attempted to connect to it and issue bad passwords. And in many cases, it didn't even log that someone had attempted to remotely manage the software or the device without authorization. Excuse me. Long-term issues, as we saw them, the upgrade process for most products was indeed replacement. We kind of feel that could be very expensive, as well as a complex process, moving the rule sets between devices. And most of the appliances that we reviewed do not offer high-speed connectivity options. Most of them come with 10100 Ethernet cards in them, and anything beyond that is considered to be out of the scope of the platform. We talked a little bit to some of the vendors who were able to support even Token Ring and ATM, and most of them just simply said, no, you'll have to look at some other product. The things that we kind of saw that need to happen if you're a network appliance developer, we really want better management and configuration processes. You have some great ideas if you're a developer out there, and some of the processes that you've built to date are fantastic, but they're always one step short of where we needed to be. So we are asking you to really design a better management process that users can deploy. We were looking for more configurable logging. I've mentioned that. I've kind of been over it. An integrated intrusion detection software would be fantastic if we could get a little bit more information, or even allow that gathering process to be automated. That would be fantastic. You have to remember when you deploy these appliances that the folks that are going to be deploying and using them are probably not educated system administrators. They're not professional network people. And we found the improvements were needed in the alerting methods. Many of the alerting processes issued those alerts in plain text, and at best, even the SNMP management information was transmitted in the clear. So our basic findings, if you were looking for adequate security for a small to medium-sized business, this is definitely a route that you should check out. You need to be very careful about the products that you choose. Make sure that you get them in and review them prior to implementation, and that they can indeed provide adequate security with ease of deployment. The thing that we were kind of left with at the end of this whole exercise was a little bit of a bad taste in our mouth, that they really possessed excellent width. These products were very wide. They had many different options and add-ons, but they really lacked in product depth. Every one of these products left us with a sense that we should be getting more than what we were getting. For those of you who are interested in contacting any of these companies about the products, Phoenix Firewall is by Progressive Systems, and leave those up here for you guys. They're in your book as well. And I thank you for attending today. If you have any questions, please go ahead.
Is there a grid like various devices between these?
The question is there a great variance in pricing? An unbelievable variance in pricing. It started at $695, and it went up to $25,000. We couldn't figure out exactly how expensive the casings were on the devices, but it seemed to be somehow relational to them. The cooler the case, the more expensive it appeared to be. No clue what was inside.
How long did it take to do this?
We spent about 6 months performing these tests. Literally, to test each one of these firewalls, it would take about a week to run it through its paces. We also left it up, left those firewalls in place so that we could do stability testing against the denial of service attacks long term.
Were all of these immune to your denial of service attacks?
All of the ones that we showed some success with, I will tell you there were some appliance firewalls out there on the market that the minute we hit them with a ping flood, the external interface would stop responding. And we've seen them reboot mid-session for no apparent reason. The question is, can everybody hear the questions, or I should repeat this? Okay. The question was, in general, how is support for these products? The product support team was typical product support in that usually the folks who answered the phones would take a message and eventually an engineer would call us back. Typical response times were ranging about 24 hours to get a correct fix on the implementation. The question is, when will the white paper be available? We're hoping by the end of this month. There are some of the folks that are trying to get trying to get the devices, the manufacturers, to sign off on different forms. Hold on a second, I'll bring that back up. And the white paper, for those of you who are looking for it, will be at www.microsolve.com.
Sir? Did you do performance testing?
The question is, did we do any performance testing? No, we did not. We kind of were interested in specifically the security environment of it, so that was precluded from our test, unfortunately.
Are you able to name any of the other products that didn't make it to your group list?
The question is, can I name any of the other products that didn't? No, but they will be in the white paper. yes, sir.
You mentioned that PIX doesn't have any application proxies. That implies that the other four do, for example, sendmail. Is that true?
The question is that PIX, I mentioned that PIX does not have application proxies and do some of them. Yes, some of them do include application level proxies. You'll, if you look at the slides, you'll notice I mentioned when, in some cases where they did. They, in the white paper, there will be a product matrix as well, and I hate to keep referring you to that. I'm feeling like tech support now. but yes, those are all mentioned. The importance of that is that you are able to better control and process the information flow from devices as opposed to relying upon the packet content information for access control. Yes, sir. The question is, was this an independent study or funded by a private company? It was an independent study. My company was asked to do this for one of our clients. We did not charge the client for the process. So yes, it was an independent. And for the record, I have no relationship with any of these companies or the products that we reviewed. Any other questions? Yes, sir. The question is, did any of the firewalls that we reviewed have offerings of integrated intrusion detection? And did we test them? No, none of them offered any type of IDS. The only one that came close was that PIX device from Cisco. They had talked with us a little bit about integrating what used to be the Wheel Group's IDS product. However, at the time that we received even the newest revision of the firewall, it was not available. Yes, sir.
What happens to the log files? Do I store them locally, or do you have to have
another box? Actually, that's a fantastic question. The question is, are the log files stored locally on the device, or do you have to have another? Most of them store them locally. A few of them offered the ability to offload them to some other syslog gathering device like a Linux box or some other Unix-based device. The majority of them, however, believe it or not, store them locally. And the issue there became that very quickly on some of the small devices, such as SonicWall, you would have to pull those logs almost on a daily basis if you had any traffic at all, or they would start to overwrite the old data. The question is on some of the firewalls that are web-based managed. Do you have to have the current version of the browser to be supported? And the answer to that was yes. Although without exception, IE4 and above were supported, or Netscape 4 and above were supported. So we didn't run into any issues there. And many of them, actually all of the ones that utilized the browser interface, we were able to use not only from 95, 98, and T, but also from our Unix workstations as well, which thrilled us to no end. So, yes, sir.
You glossed over early in your presentation, but could you maybe go back and describe what you mean by the term adequate security? This is a security conference. I see something about the GUI or the management interface in each slide, but I'm really kind of curious about the security implications of each product.
The question is, could I define what we thought to be adequate security? The process there was simply that it would be resistant to information gathering probes. It could manage to survive sustained denial of service attacks, and that it would protect the internal systems from discovery and remote mapping. That was simply what we were looking for. We were not looking for the type of level that you would achieve from a very high-end firewall where it would actually parse data content to protect against buffer overruns and things like that.
Are you going to have results of the security testing in your white paper at all?
Yes, and I apologize. We made every attempt to get that white paper available prior to this. We're experiencing some attorney blockages from about three of the vendors. Yes, sir. In the back.
Did you happen to test Firewall 1 on the Nokia router?
The question is, did I test Firewall 1 on the Nokia router? And the answer to that is yes, we did test that device. One of the things that we ran into that we didn't feel was adequate was the logging capability on the firewall. That's why it wasn't included.
One of the criteria you mentioned was the need to access mail and web from the outside. Can you talk about what you saw there?
Yes, sir. The question is that one of the criteria that I mentioned was the ability to access mail and the web from the outside, and what did we discover there? In general, across the platform, almost always, without exception, I guess that was kind of contradictory, wasn't it? Almost always, we saw that it was simply packet filtering rule-based, where we would just point port 25 to some other internal server, and it would pass data through that process. So we were kind of left a little bit discouraged, given the current state of send mail and where it is. However, there were some firewalls, and I believe only two or three out of the 23, that allowed you to actually proxy that data through an application proxy. Overall, though, we noticed that it was very dependable, and that moving web data and mail data between the devices was extremely reliable. We did not find in any event where you could do port reallocation attacks or any type of other probes against those internal devices that weren't allowed through the ACL list.
Were you able to test the port policy route?
The question is, did I test XYZ firewall? And I'm going to have to defer that until we get to the white paper. I'm sorry. The question is, did we do any DNS testing? Yes. All of the automated scanners, of course, included DNS basic attacks, and there were attempts to perform DNS cache poisoning. None of those were successful. Actually, the DNS servers that were included on the devices were extremely robust. And when we got to thinking about it, it was because they're actually embedded in the hardware, so there wasn't much chance of actually being able to destroy those devices.
You would personally go out and purchase one of the five, which one would it be?
The question is, if I were to personally go out and purchase one of the five, which one would it be? And I'm afraid I can't answer that and maintain my objectivity, so I apologize.
Any user-based authentication inbound or outbound?
The question is, was there any user-based authentication? Yes. We discovered some of the devices allowed just password and that basic challenge and login challenge type stuff. In addition to that, about five of them supported smart cards for authentication as well as tokens. And there were a couple of them, including the PIX device, that allowed you to create different profiles to use different devices for different users. So in that case, user authentication and challenge and response mechanisms were extremely robust. Yes, sir.
Did you check to see how well these machines log activities performed by administrators?
I'm sorry?
Did you check to see how well these firewalls log activities that were performed by administrators?
The question is, did we check to see how the systems logged what was done by an administrator? And yes, we did. In most cases, those actions are not logged on these devices. I guess the assumption there is that if you're the administrator of the firewall, you're pretty much in charge and could destroy the evidence anyway. Yes, sir.
Did any of these products support any kind of configuration management?
By configuration management, you mean? Yes, sir. Almost every one of them. The question was, did these allow you to configure the rule sets? And yes, all of them.
Did you know what your last rule set was when you changed it? Recreate yourself.
Oh, okay. I see. The question is, could you view the previous rule set while you is that correct or?
Yeah, version control.
Like revision control.
Revision control.
Okay. Yes, many of them did allow you to perform revision control on the rule sets. In addition, you could save multiple instances on many of the firewalls of different rule sets, which you could dynamically allocate.
You could back out?
Yes, that is correct. You could back out.
How fancy did you get on your penetration test? Did you use fragmentation, suppression, encapsulation, hijacking, what?
Yes. The question is, how robust were our penetration attempts? And we did indeed deploy all of those technologies, such as session hijacking, such as denial of service attacks,
Fragmentation
we performed. Encapsulation, I believe some of the automated tools did that. We did not do that manually. That gives you kind of an idea.
You mentioned one firewall which had the option of command line configuration. Did that get reflected in the GUI?
The question is, did the Phoenix firewall, which has command line configuration management, were those changes reflected in the GUI? And the answer is yes. What would happen, as long as they were not being simultaneously managed, then that it, yes. Whenever you would make a change to the status files or to the ACL lists, the other system administration tools would see them. So, yes.
You seem to put a lot of importance on intrusion detection. And a firewall is like an access control device in order to process intrusion detection.
The question is, why did I place the importance on intrusion detection? The real reason here, I guess I wasn't looking for typical standard IDS deployment, like a sniffer-based IDS or something like that. I was looking for the type of logging that you would get from an IDS, such as attack recognition, because if I send a device like this out into the field, an unskilled administrator is not going to know that 16 packets dropped with to 16 different destination ports is necessarily a port scan. And that's information that they need to be able to report and act upon. It's very difficult to build an underlying security policy for an administrator to follow if you can't recognize attack signatures. So that's kind of why. Any other questions? And the question is, am I going to review NT firewalls? After this nightmare, probably not. I will tell you that I became a little disillusioned in this process. We really had anticipated performing this testing and bringing this detail out, and we had been working on this since last year to plan it, and then 6 months in the actual implementation. And the greatest headache that I ran into in this process was dealing with the vendors. They were increasingly and incredibly unreliable, and they were increasingly and incredibly unresponsive whenever I had needs that weren't being met. And for whatever reason, that's the way it is.
Your testing here talks about your definition of an appliance firewall being something that comes to the hardware solution. Mm-hmm. Would you test any solutions that might have their own like firewall OS and firewall application, but can be installed with standard hardware?
The question was, did we test any firewalls that weren't integrated OS and hardware devices? The answer is no.
They were integrated, OS and firewall software devices, but they can be installed on your provided hardware.
Okay, the question was, did we test any that were installed on our provided hardware? No. We were looking for simple plug-and-play devices in this case. And there seemed to be a plethora of them, so... Yes, sir.
I was just going to mention in response to the question on NT firewalls that NT really does have some pretty bad memory management problems, and as such really isn't a good candidate for a firewall where you're going to have high throughput. The problem is the way it does paging in virtual memory is essentially old-fashioned and prone to page faults, which require recovery conditions. I don't know if the rest of the audience can hear me or not, but I would not recommend an NT firewall when you have high throughput and multiple interface cards to the firewall.
The gentleman simply recommends that you don't deploy a firewall on NT, and I don't think there's probably not a whole lot of people here who would disagree with you. So yes, that is true, and he gives some very valid points that high throughput is a problem because of lack of memory capabilities to manage that process. Yes, sir, in the back.
How did you make a determination that firewall went out of gas at 500 milliseconds?
I'm sorry?
You had made a statement earlier that 500 users would not recommend firewall above that. How did you make that determination?
The question is, how did we determine that there was a 500 user threshold? And the answer is that it was just simple geometrics. We simply tried 50 users and then multiplied the results of how much CPU and how much resources we were using on the devices and then came up with a figure. So it was simple math. The question is, did we evaluate the product protocols? The routing protocols that were supported by the product. No, we did not. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, sir. I can't hear you. We did not measure effective bandwidth. We were simply using 10 megabit Ethernet to test the firewall devices and 100 megabit Ethernet.
Sometimes OSPF can be used to implement hot failover for firewalls. How many did support OSPF?
Only two of the 23. The question is, OSPF can be used to support hot failover for the firewalls. out of all the 23, only two supported any type of failover at all, and that was the PICS and another unnamed device. And of those, both of them were proprietary. Well, I think that they just had proprietary methods for performing the same function, but they were not OSPF compliant.
Oh, I see.
Yes. Yes, sir, in the red shirt.
Considering the time frame to do this testing, how accurate do you expect the information in the white paper to be when it's released? And do you expect to do any updates to keep it current as a new product to keep it rolled out for the vendors?
There may be an update. The question is how timely, how accurate will the data be since it took so long to complete the process? And, do we plan on updating it? Updating it is a possibility. We are discussing that currently with another group. And the information should still be accurate because we haven't seen, out of the 23, there have only been two products that have released new versions to date. Great. I want to thank you guys for coming out today. I really appreciate it, and enjoy the rest of the con.